This is CliffCentral.com.
In this episode of Making Waves with Stan Katz, I'm talking to the one and only Gareth Cliff, who 5 years ago took a brave decision to launch online radio in this country. Gareth, I don't think anyone had done it before.
No, not in South Africa. But I have to say, there'd been people who'd done online radio, they'd done streaming.
Yeah.
But not the model that we invented.
Your model was a fully fledged streaming radio station.
Yeah.
And 5 years later, you're still around to tell the tale, even though you had to pivot. And now you're kind of leading the charge on podcasting in this country, which I think is amazing. Let's just go back a bit to your career on, what do you call it, terrestrial radio?
Your baby.
My baby. Where you were the bad boy of radio, which I thoroughly enjoyed listening to. But I kept thinking the management was hobbling you, both at 702 and then at 5. And you had, what, 3 suspensions on 5, which was great. That was the kind of radio that you were doing. And I want to talk about the industry in general. There's not much tolerance for people who are stepping out of the box, so to speak.
Well, you know, before we even get into any of that, I've got to say that either subliminally or consciously, you and John Burks were the two people who gave me an introduction to radio. I didn't know when I was listening to you guys on 702 all those years ago, on my way into school or on my way home. I knew your names from as early as I can remember, and it was always part of how I understood good radio to be made.
It's a very nice compliment, thank you.
It was massively important to me that I at least did it as professionally and had as much fun as it sounded like you guys were having. And I've continued to admire the contribution that both of you have made. And there is no such thing in South Africa as terrestrial commercial radio without you. And we'll get back to Burks perhaps later on. But the fact that you created the model for commercial radio and you figured out and you helped South Africa to figure out the model to do that, what was what made all of this possible? Because before that, there just wasn't anything else except state-owned and state-controlled transmission. When we started podcasting and doing online stuff 5 years ago, it wasn't as much a rebellion as it was looking for what's new. It wasn't to get away from control or any of that stuff. That was a nice excuse, and it created some hype. And I mean, I kind of enjoyed pretending it was because I'd finally be free. But, you know, I've also been fortunate to have worked with someone who you did.
Well, you created the impression that it was to be free because of your slogan at the time, Unradio, which I thought was quite brave because to say Unradio was to imply that there was something wrong with radio. In this country, though, radio is very popular. People love radio. Over 90% of the population. What were you trying to communicate with Unradio?
Well, it was important for me to start something new and to go in a new direction. I wasn't bored with radio, but it was definitely time for a new challenge. So that was part of it. And I was just about to finish a sentence there about how you and I have both worked with Rena, and I have to mention her.
I was going to bring that in, yeah.
At the outset, because she was a very important part of what you achieved at 702 all those years ago, and she's been integral to what I've achieved here. And it was a discussion that we'd had for many years before I'd left commercial radio, and something that we knew we had to do, and the internet was obviously the place to go, but it was a question of when and how best to do it. And that was kind of how we got to the point in 2013-14 when we made the decision.
Rena would have told you that we were making it up as we went along, you know, was let's just launch this thing and fix it on the fly. And it was scary and exciting all at the same time.
That's exactly what she said when we started this.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know. We were flying blind. And we probably could have made more mistakes. I'm grateful we didn't, because they may have cost us the experiment. But actually, we were very lucky, because a lot of the experience that Rena had in 702 particularly, but also throughout the rest of her career, and the experience that I'd had on air, made me kind of fearless about the fact that we were a team to be reckoned with. And I had something to lose in terms of reputation if it failed, but she always said she had nothing to lose. Now, I mean, that's kind of the right attitude to have. I felt like, you know, we've got to boldly go ahead and build it, and they will come, effectively. And well, hopefully they have.
Well, I think one learns more from one's mistakes than from one's successes. And the interesting thing is, when we succeed at something, we don't stop to question why, whether maybe it was just luck. But we certainly question why when something fails. So you were able to, excuse me, make the, you were able to pivot from online radio. Talk to me about the problems with online radio. Can one even call it radio?
Well, radio is over 100 years old now.
Yeah.
And there are very few things that haven't been tried on radio by someone at some stage. We all like to think we're original, but there isn't really that much.
Nothing
space.
New under the sun.
Correct. So that was part
of it. But then, as Pliny the Elder said, always something new out of Africa.
Well, there were problems with radio. I mean, ultimately, it was only a matter of time before the SABC did decide to fire me. They were going through some really tough times just after I left, because Claudia Motsweneng was appointed. But while I was still there, they didn't really interfere. I think we had largely kind of incompetent and ignorant management. But they weren't an affront to me or to the audience. They tried to kind of, you know, bumble along and make as few mistakes as possible, but I didn't really have problems with them. We had a couple of disagreements here and there. They never, I felt, understood what an increase was. They didn't understand the value of the audience and why it was bringing in the money. So there were some fundamental problems there, but it wasn't insurmountable, and we managed to navigate most of them. The content itself was always an area of excitement for me, because with radio, as you already know, you make it up kind of as you go as well, and there's always new input. There's news, there's what's on television, there's what people are having experiences with in their lives. There's no shortage of material, and it's kind of a point of view thing a lot of the time, where what makes the show isn't necessarily the content itself, but the way that you respond to it and the way that you turn it into a product, into a show. And I enjoyed that. I wasn't done with radio, but it was about the right time, because they were starting to make decisions in terms of events that we wanted to do and kind of breaking the mold in little ways that showed that there was a lack of imagination. And the opportunity that the internet gave us was enormous. You're not limited. And we decided we'd do this with an eye to creating opportunities, not just for me and the show that I was planning for myself, but for other people. And it all sort of fell together. It all fell into place as we were going. There was an experiment with television that we tried in the very beginning. There was an experiment with a whole channel that we created that lasted for 3 years of live shows virtually for 12 hours a day, which was extraordinary.
It was extraordinary.
Producing content. One of the shows was an early experiment of yours.
Yeah.
That was part of the lineup.
I thought it was a failed experiment, actually.
I don't think so. I think you know as well as anybody that you have to give something time, especially if it's new.
Yeah.
And you have to change people's habits. And I thought it was entertaining. You and Kate Normington, and, you know, you'd have this cast of characters, and you'd create this theater of the mind world, which has always been something radio has been able to do better than anybody else. Because when you activate someone else's imagination, rather than give them the pictures and give them everything like a movie would, it's so much more immersive.
And
they all see a different picture.
And the pictures are personal. To each person.
Absolutely. So it was interesting, and we did a lot of experimentation in those early days, and none of it was wasted time. Gave people a chance to podcast, broadcast, that would never have got a chance on commercial radio. They don't have enough slots available, and they don't take risks.
No, they don't take risks. And radio has, by and large, become pretty bland. It's the mixture as before.
Well, that's not just management's fault.
No.
It's sponsors' fault often, because you have to do three competitions in a morning show, and suddenly it's not fun anymore. It's just get through this competition. They have playlists that are kind of all the same. They have this imaging, this jingle stuff going on, which has been going since you first started a show and hasn't
before we even started a show.
And hasn't even changed very much.
No, it hasn't.
And there aren't any broadcasters at this point that are willing to stick their necks out, because the cost of losing your job in an economy like this, and the cost of losing your job in an industry as small as the radio industry is in South Africa, is enormous. Luckily for me, I got rid of that fear when I got fired from campus radio right in the very beginning, which led me to meet John Burks, which led me to meet Rena, and got me onto the air eventually. But I wasn't afraid after that of being fired.
Mm. Well, that's why you could do good radio when you don't have that fear. Let's talk about radio in a multi-platform universe. And one of the things that crops up in many of my conversations with broadcasters is, if you have a strong Instagram following, you'll get a show on radio. But it's a different skill set that's required, from doing outrageous things on Instagram to get noticed, than creating good radio with Theatre of the Mind. There is no Theatre of the Mind today.
I think podcasting is starting to get into that area. There's a lot of radio drama type stuff going on, documentary making and audio.
I think that's where Theatre of the Mind lives.
And I think it can thrive in that space, because the audience that's coming for it is not an audience that just happens to be listening because they're in their car. They're actually coming to it, clicking on it, downloading it. It lives on their device. It's this endowment effect that Tala talks about in his book with what's the other guy's name? Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow. Mm. This idea that you have there's almost a primal response to this kind of thing, and this sense of ownership around it, which is different to just getting in the car and whatever's on, you'll listen to, or you'll switch to the next channel, which is so easy to do these days. But to go back to your point about radio, this Instagram following, Twitter following thing is both a blessing and a curse. It's one of the reasons I felt confident enough to start what we have, because we had critical mass. I had a million followers on Twitter, and I think I got to the million before anyone else in South Africa at that stage.
I think others had
surpassed, but it was an important part of why we felt confident about doing this. But it's a curse in that that is almost the only measure that people have now for popularity, relevance, and it really isn't an accurate one. It's very easy to trend on Twitter. You just have to get the right number of people tweeting at the same time. It's very easy to get followers. You have to post a picture of, you know, some attractive girl naked. These are not necessarily sustainable things. And even Instagram is now toying with the idea of taking away likes, because it's not good for people's mental health. It's attention seeking. And attention seeking is very different to producing interesting content. The two are worlds apart, in fact. Whether you're taking amazing pictures because you're a great photographer, or you're just someone documenting your food because you're a narcissist who wants attention, there's all the world of difference between them. And radio does absolutely not translate from Instagram or Twitter or anything else. And as you know, it also doesn't apply for television people who go into radio. I mean, that was something that used to happen. Journalists don't always make, they sometimes can, so can TV people or Instagram people, but a radio person, and it feels sort of surreal for me to be talking to one of the only people in the world. It's you, Burks, and Howard Stern. The only three people that I've ever listened to, like a scientist watches an experiment.
That is an amazing compliment.
To sit here and talk to you is very surreal for me, because you're a radio guy through and through. And there's a kind of respect that isn't at all grudging when I'm talking to someone.
No, I understand. It's a mutual respect, Gareth. Of all the people who've come up over the years since I've been in this business. You stand out head and shoulders above the rest. And I'm not trying to flatter you. It's a fact. And I used to love your show on 702 because you were pushing boundaries. And even on 5, you were pushing boundaries. And I was always under the impression that you left radio because you felt you were being hobbled by management. I was lucky because I was working with Rena, and Rena was very good at cleaning up after me.
This is my line. Yeah. I've said the same thing 100,000 times.
Rena used to walk behind me with a big broom.
Yeah, that's exactly what she does for me, yeah. Except now she sometimes hits me with a broom as well.
Sometimes that's necessary, yeah.
I think radio in South Africa, though, is kind of bland at the moment, and I think that's partly as a result of there's a paucity of talent to some degree.
Yes.
And what talent there is isn't nurtured and, you know, and cultivated. Because I didn't know. I mean, I had this wild energy and I had all these ideas. I had pages and pages of feature ideas and impersonations that I wanted to do. This is coming out of varsity and campus radio. And I had, you know, all of this wild, untamed ambition to do things on air. And I had to still be clipped back like a hedge sometimes so that I could grow into something attractive. I had to be steered in the right direction. And there's no way that without Rena, I wouldn't have got to a position where I would have been presentable, where I would have been acceptable, where I would have been commercially viable. And all of those things matter. So a lot of the DJs and talk show hosts that are around now don't have the benefit of that. A coach, mentor person, but also someone who gives you honest feedback. Because your audience don't. Sometimes they'll flatter you because they love what you're doing without seeing the things that could improve. Sometimes your family and your friends are the worst people when it comes to this because maybe they don't even listen. And they tell you that they do. Maybe the people that should be telling you, the management, don't know enough. So it's a very hard thing to find that person you can rely on honestly. And aside from that, you also need to be given enough room to run. And I had that in bursts. I had it in just enough of it for me to keep on being creative, not feel stifled. And it gave me a thrill to piss people off, especially when I was much younger. It gave me a thrill. I was an attention seeker in the beginning, without doubt. But that did change.
Anyone who is out there in the public, I know that I was an applause junkie. I didn't start off as an applause junkie. I started because I loved radio. As a kid, before television, radio was my mainstay. I just loved the medium. I didn't get into it because I wanted to be famous. I didn't get into it because I wanted to make money. I got into it because I wanted to create in that space. And you mentioned nurturing. I agree with that. I don't think management at most stations in this country nurtures talent. I don't think they identify it in the first place. And if something isn't working, first place to look is management.
Look, this is my first gig as a manager. So I've always been hard on management. I've always said that they are the problem. And I've been very rude about them on air. I used to, one of the reasons I got fired on campus radio was for recording a management meeting I was in and then playing it out in the air and saying, listen to what a terrible person the station manager is.
A very interesting way of handing in your resignation.
Correct. So, I mean, there were a couple of other reasons too, but management get the flack they deserve. You see, I've always thought that they never really can take the credit when things go well on a show. If your audience goes up and you're suddenly commercially successful and advertisers love you, they can't really take the credit for that. And they also can't take the blame when you say or do something stupid on air because that's entirely you. So maybe they get a really tough assignment from the get-go.
With all your experience, what makes for a good manager?
For me or for anybody else, because they're different things. I mean, it's an individual thing for me.
All right. Let's talk about you.
Okay. Well, the only manager who successfully managed me, again, and without turning this into an interview about her, because then maybe you should interview her, is Rena.
I offered to interview her.
She won't talk to you, right?
Not she won't talk to me. She just doesn't want to be interviewed. Because we do.
She won't go on my show.
We have very interesting conversations off air.
Well, you've also remained friends for a very long time, and it's no surprise when you created something that you guys did. But to go back to the question, so I've been managed successfully by her, but it's been at times extremely hairy and very difficult, and it's mostly my fault. Older, wiser, more sensible, with more experience, Rena could see the potential and was happy to work with it despite the fact that I was often a brat, a real problem child. But I think she also, because she's got a background in psychology and social work, knew that, you know, you got to get the best out of people like that because they've got something to give, as opposed to someone who's easy to manage but hasn't got a lot of depth, either in the ups or the downs. Other people have managed me badly either because they were too controlling, in which case I just rebel, or they were too lax, in which case I just get away with murder, and neither is necessarily productive. Doesn't achieve any valuable end.
And now podcasts.
Yeah.
So as I said in the beginning, you were able to make that pivot. And I must congratulate you. Most new businesses fail within the first 3 to 5 years or sooner. This is 5 years later. The online radio station, it was a fully fledged radio station online. Why do you think that didn't work?
Well, you mean online streaming in general?
Yeah,
or
because
it did work for us. I don't think it's fair to say that it didn't work. We just decided to change the business model.
There was always the criticism that you never published your listenership figures.
Well, yeah, you see, that's not entirely true. I mean, the thing about digital is you can find those figures. And in fact, there is an article published by My Broadband some months after we started, which revealed all our figures. And we were quite proud of them.
Oh.
I thought they were terrific. There were, by the end of our third year, we'd had over 10 million pieces of content downloaded. It might even have been our second year. This is tremendous off a base of zero.
Why didn't you make more of this?
Well, you know, because we didn't know. We were dealing with an entirely new ecosystem.
Mm.
What is good in part? Is 10,000 people listening to you every morning good? And remember, I'm still doing an online radio show every morning.
Yes, I know.
So it's not a failure. We haven't given up on that or turned our back on it.
Mm.
In fact, it's still also one of the things that makes us money. So it's going and it's working. It's part of the mix that we're providing now. And podcasting has to be part of the mix that all marketers look at for all of their businesses, no matter what business you're in. But the numbers, how do you gauge this? We've only just recently started to do some actual qualitative and quantitative research into this to make some sense out of what is an entirely new universe when it comes to numbers. A podcast listener is worth a fortune compared to a radio listener.
Of course.
Because of that same thing I mentioned earlier about how people actively take part. They engage. Engagement isn't a question. In radio, it is. You know, you can passive listen. You might just have the radio on in the background. You might not actually be listening to what the DJ is saying. Certainly, in many cases, the commercials that are played are not listened to.
Well, radio is an accompaniment to other activities.
There we are. Now, podcasting is too, but you've selected it, and you're actively listening. Otherwise, what's the point? It's not music. It's just playing in the background. I listen to podcasts in the gym. I listen to podcasts when I'm driving. And I listen to podcasts while I'm doing other things, manual things, but I can still attune my brain to the content I'm listening to because I'm not going there for puerile entertainment all the time. There is some of that. But podcasting largely is an intellectual pursuit for me, and it's where I find out about the world. It's an adult education university on an unbelievable scale. I get to have dinner with Sam Harris and Ricky Gervais. And they don't know who I am. I'll never have access to people like that in real life. I might, but most people wouldn't. And to hear them talk for 2 hours is a masterclass in both comedy and understanding the world as we have it now. These are things that were not available to people before, because if you missed it on radio, good as the interview might have been, you missed it. So the commercial value of a podcast listener is enormously high. Spotify just released a result the other day, and they've done extensive research in this because it's what they're buying now. They're buying up all the podcast producers in America.
Who's that?
Spotify.
Yes. Okay.
So, and they're in South Africa too. Our podcasts are available on Spotify. They found that when podcast listeners were surveyed, 81% of podcast listeners responded to commercial advertisers and sponsors in a podcast, either by Googling that supplier, that service, that sponsor, that product, or by actually buying it.
The interesting thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it's the advertising or the sponsor's message, don't know what you would call it, is very subtle. Take your you have a very successful podcast called Blind History,
right?
Which, congratulations, you were a finalist in the New York International Festival.
Mm-hmm.
That is a hell of an achievement.
Well, it was an achievement for us and for the clients.
For both of you, obviously. My point is that the sponsor's message is very subtle.
Yeah. He's just a history fan who I introduce as the MD of Taylor Blinds and Shutters. But there was a lot of online visual content to accompany that, which reinforced the messages.
Okay.
And, of course, there are links. And it's all very 21st century. It makes sense. And for the listener, the banner pops up on our app, for example. So it's there to remind you. And it's not in your face. And
I think why it's working as well, generally, is the factor of low and declining brand loyalty, because I'm talking about the big brands using traditional advertising, interruption advertising.
Yeah.
And because of the internet, that is less effective than it's ever been.
Well, how do you get into the head of someone? If you're an advertiser, if you're a brand, how do you get into people's heads? If you're listening to a podcast, and you know from listening to international ones, like Joe Rogan or whatever, it's 3 hours.
Mm.
Now, if you're a sponsor on that show, you might get a live read or whatever, but with something like Blind History, it's 15 minutes, and if you listen to the whole series, it's 4 hours. Now, if I could get into your head for 4 hours with my subtle messaging, I'd have a lot more impact than if you're an interrupting 30-second commercial on a channel where I've actually gone for maybe the music, maybe the traffic, maybe the news, maybe the talk, maybe the competitions. Who knows what I'm there for?
Mm.
But probably not for your 30-second commercial.
Mm.
But if you come for this, Taylor Blinds is part of the package you get for the content that you've asked for, that you've chosen. The audience chooses you as opposed to you target marketing the audience. So every listen is almost qualified by that very fact.
Yes. And
you get to live in their head for that long. That's marketing gold.
Exactly. The two tune-out factors on radio are ads and disc jockeys. That's why I am particularly excited about podcasting. And it's kind of starting to take off in this country now.
Which
is great news. I mean, you pioneered this. You stuck your neck out.
Mm.
And now others are jumping on the bandwagon, and I think it's good for everyone. As they say, a rising tide floats all ships.
Right. And it is growing, and people I respect and admire are starting to do podcasts. And they're going to be good, and they're going to be great podcasts, and there'll be some terrible ones. Yeah. And I think we still got to get to the point where we can separate the wheat from the chaff.
Mm.
You know, like if you go on Netflix, there are probably series on Netflix that no one's watching.
Mm.
There are probably series that everyone's watching. And the same is true for audio. We're the Netflix of audio.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Netflix. Netflix's growth, subscriber growth, is slowing.
In the U.S.,
oh, is it just
internationally, it's growing, yeah. But that's an interesting example to cite, because podcasting is growing faster than any other medium right now. Faster than Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, YouTube, Netflix, just about anything. There is no category that's performing better than podcasting right now in terms of acceleration.
What makes for a good podcast?
Well, the point is they're all so different, right? If you're a Star Wars fan, there are these three geeks who get together and talk about Star Wars every week. I mean, it's terrible. It's badly produced. These guys sound like the nebbishes that you would avoid on the playground at school. But they love it. And they're not polished because they're not broadcasters. But if you're a Star Wars fan, you're going to find out stuff there that to you, that's just the jackpot. Mm. And then there are these beautifully produced NPR and Gimlet and Cliff Central podcasts, which are about history and science and philosophy and art. And there are podcasts for everything. And you get the ones that are more in the radio mold, and you get the ones that are more like a TV documentary, but with sound. The point is, there's room for everybody. And I think we're starting to discover that the internet, just as YouTube has exploded this world of visual media, the podcast example is the one that will be used to describe one day how we exploded the audio media content options. And I'm more excited now than ever. I think in South Africa we've reached a point where I don't have to explain what a podcast is to most people anymore. I still have to explain some of the detail around it. But a podcast, the word, is now familiar to most people.
Yes, it is.
And that's great. I mean, long may it continue. In the U.S., they're projecting podcast ad revenue to be over $1 billion in the next 2 years, which is fantastic.
It is, but it's still small in relation to commercial radio.
But it's the only category in audio that's growing.
That's growing, yeah.
Yeah, there are only four things you can listen to. There's music, there's radio, there's audiobooks, and there's podcasting. If you're an advertiser, you can't advertise in audiobooks, and you can't advertise in music, unless you pay a fortune and you get like the rapper to mention your name. Mm. And that has limited effect, right? So that leaves you with radio and podcasting. Which one's growing and which one's declining? So where's the revenue going to go eventually?
And do we know how it's growing in this country?
We've done some
in terms of revenue.
We've done some research. I mean, we're probably in the best position to be able to figure that out.
Yes.
And honestly, the statistics are not entirely clear. We know it's growing nicely. I mean, we've changed our model, so it's hard to tell what's coming from pure podcasting, what's coming from all the stuff around it, because these days it's a 360-degree thing. You've got to be involved in social media. Yeah, you've got to be involved in PR. You've got to be involved in events. All of that is muddying the waters. So, you know, it used to be very easy to say, well, this proportion is from banner clicks, for example. It's much harder with podcasting. But I think that ultimately, as people start to understand that it's not just about the number of people, I'm going to quote you here. I always say this to people. It's reaching the audience that counts, not counting the audience you reach. Which is the shortcut to why podcast audiences are so in demand. Because these are the people who have disposable income. They are selective about what they listen to. They are smart, usually quite well educated. They're partaking in the economy in ways that people underneath are not. And therefore, be with the early adopters and take advantage of that rising tide that you mentioned earlier. The other alternatives are just dismal.
They are. It seems to me that the traditional radio broadcasters in this country have been caught a bit flat-footed in that they're not sure how to use podcasts. And generally, their podcasts consist of replays of an on-air program.
Well, it's because they copied us. I mean, that's what they were doing. They had no model to follow, so they're copying it. We started off doing that. We'd take all our live shows and turn them into podcasts. That's exactly what the Prime Medias and the Kagisos and even some of the SABC channels are doing now. And now that we've started doing different stuff, mark my words, they'll start doing that as well. Mm. Whether they can do it as well as we do, I don't know, because you and I both understand, and the audience does, that it's very different to have a radio show and a podcast.
Yes. Totally different.
And the one is a creature with four limbs, and the other one's a creature with two. And the people who come for a podcast are not necessarily the same people who come for a radio show. When you're doing a radio show, there are things you have to do that you don't do in podcasts, and vice versa.
What does the future hold for Gareth Cliff?
Can I just add something to that previous comment? Because it's just occurred to me now. YouTube can do everything TV can do.
Yes.
And some things TV can't. Podcasts can do everything.
Well, YouTube has its own problems, and we'll talk about
it. Well, sure, but podcasting, the same way, can do everything radio can do, and it can do more.
Yes.
So it's got more appendages. It's got more space to develop. It's got more opportunities for the audience, the advertisers, the creatives, the presenters, the events that can be built around it. These are things that radio is still limited in some ways to, that we don't have to worry about as much.
Yes.
So your other question.
What does the future hold for Gareth Cliff?
I'm very proud of where we're at the moment. We're at our, you know, our point of real take us seriously now.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, these guys are going to fail. They're not going to be around for a while. It's going to be a disaster. All those doomsayers. And some of them were at our presentation not so long ago. People who said, oh, this will last 6 months. And they were here for our talk that we gave on the value of a podcast listener, and they were all listening very intently. I'm pleased that we're doing what we're doing. It gives me I'm getting a bit of a thrill out of selling and out of being the businessman as opposed to just being the talent. I'm enjoying the opportunities that we are forging for ourselves in a space that's new. It's almost like being an explorer, and that's cool because every day is different. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm enjoying explaining podcasting to people, although with some of them, when they're not listening, it gets tedious. And seeing other talent develop in this space. We've got a young man called Sia here who is he's as knowledgeable as I am, and this is he's immersed in this. This is the world he knows. He didn't know a world before podcasting. And to see people of the next generation just taking to this, and you've seen kids with cell phones and iPads, it's second nature to them. And podcasting will be that way for people Sia's age and younger. That gives me great joy too.
Well, Gareth, long may you continue to make the world safe for podcasting. It's been a pleasure chatting. Thank you.
Thank you, Stan.
This is CliffCentral.com.